welcome to the Oregon Files podcast. First, our disclaimer. We're amateur podcasters simply for entertainment. If we misquote or offend, it was not on purpose to do so. Also, we're recording from our typical recording studio, which is my attic. You may hear kids, dogs, neighbors, what have you. Thank you and enjoy, and my co-host, Elliot Bowman.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark. Hope everyone is having a fantastic start to your February. Hope everyone's staying nice and toasty. It's been a little nippy in the morning, but...
A little nippy.
I said it was nice today, though. Well, towards the afternoon, it was like t-shirt
23.
Right? I feel like a broken record because I probably say this like every single time we do like an interview or like every time that we finish an episode and we try to brainstorm for the next one. It's always like, well, what do we want to do now? Who do we want to interview? And it's just incredible that we live in such a small population, live in such a small community, and we still can find amazing people that we have on today. We were interviewed Elena and Rusty Dillinger from Source One Serenity, and they happened to name drop who we have on today. Aaron Malo. I knew I was going to butcher that. From
Valley Farm to School.
I was going to tongue twister that one too. Valley Farm to School.
It's a long one.
Well, thank you so much for taking time. Thank you so much for coming on and agreeing to do this. Really, really appreciate it. And if you wouldn't mind maybe telling us a little about yourself and who you are and why you agreed to come on here.
I am Erin from Umpqua Valley Farm to School. I've been the executive director here since we started Umpqua Valley Farm to School in the end of 2019. We took over a nonprofit that used to be Thriving Waters. It was a small community beautification project out in Glide. Teddy Fromdahl was the executive director, and she's a family member. So she wanted to be done. And one of the things that they wanted to focus on but never really got time was school gardens. And I've been working with school gardens since about 2010. And so I was like, I'll take it on. And we've just like grown rapidly since then. I moved to Douglas County to work at the school garden at Phoenix School, which is like a 2-acre garden farm. And I had a goal when I moved here to bring the farm to school program. It's like a national program to Douglas County. And so here we are in 2023 with the farm to school program here. So it's really grown a ton. There's 23 active school gardens in Douglas County right now.
Wow.
And so Umpqua Valley Farm to School provides resources and technical assistance to anyone who's interested in school gardens or farm to school, which includes like buying Oregon grown or processed foods for their nutrition program. We work directly with about 9 schools in Douglas County providing school garden education.
Wow.
So, yeah.
What was the first garden?
The first, gosh, in Douglas County, yeah. You know, it was maybe Phoenix School. Yeah. Well, theirs has been going on. I've been here 10 years and they've had it. It was huge by the time I got here. You know, we're so rural. There's a lot of schools that like having a garden is just no big deal. And they've always had that.
So like how hands-on are like the kids, like every day does somebody come out and like, do the kids like water the plants or like how?
Yeah, ideally the school runs the garden. The kids run the garden. So Glide has a really great garden program. Mm-hmm. It's been run by a volunteer, Mary Brown, for 13 years.
Wow.
But they're like, the kids build the beds. They built cider press, like an apple cider press. Wow. They built...
That's cool.
Gosh, what else? She just has the kids involved in everything.
Yeah.
Making compost. They just built some mushroom logs to watch the mushrooms grow. So yeah, we definitely try and include the kids in all aspects of it, which is kind of tough because schools a lot of times are like, I don't know if our kids can handle building, you know, power tools and building this stuff, but we're like, they can. It's, you know, it's all trial and error. That's the whole thing about a school garden. Like it's not growing this beautiful, perfectly manicured garden that you see in a magazine, but kids having this like experiential learning thing at their school. So
I think Fir Grove has one, if I recall, because both my daughters went to Fir Grove, and now that you say that, I mean that clicks in my head that there's one there.
Yep, we work with Fir Grove. They're getting ready to expand it a little bit.
Okay. When you tell a school like we want to do like a garden at your school, like what kind of like reception is?
So usually it's the schools that decide they want to do a garden, they contact us. You know, we just help them. Schools are so busy doing, you know, school stuff, teaching and just being, you know, having 50 different hats on all at once. So they contact us, and sometimes schools can do it on their own. They just need, like, we have a school garden manual, so we'll provide that to them. But usually to sustain a school garden, you really need an outside organization to come in and help. So that's what we do. So we'll help build the whole thing. We'll help source lumber. We're getting local lumber from Triple T Milling for the Fullerton Garden, which is really cool because I don't know that we've ever... We've gotten lumber from C&D Lumber in the past, but Triple T Milling's a really small mill in Glide. So it's really cool to be able to, like, everything's local, the lumber, the soil, and then obviously you're growing plants right there.
Does each school grow different vegetables and...
Yeah, sometimes.
Yeah.
A lot of them, we start a lot of the seeds. So, you know, we start them for all the schools at one time.
Okay.
But yeah, some schools have specific things in mind they want to start. We get a lot of donated seedlings, especially in the summertime. So we spread those out to all the schools. We've got a couple farmers that donate seedlings to us. But yeah, for the most part, it's pretty similar in the gardens. Some of them have, you know, they want to have more native plants or focus on, like, some of the elementary schools are working right now on building, like, a native plant garden to honor Cow Creek and the indigenous people to this area. Like, what should be growing here? If we're inhabited by indigenous people, how would it be growing?
That's awesome.
So I love that.
Yeah.
That's cool. Like, how much does it usually produce? Like, in, you know, all the vegetables and...
It can vary. I mean, at Phoenix School, I think we produced up to 1,000 pounds one year.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. And it went to the cafeteria. So that was really cool. Donated produce to the food banks.
Oh, wow.
But then the elementary schools, sometimes they produce a lot and sometimes they don't. And same with Phoenix School, all of them. It's trial and error. So, you know, a lot of it is just getting the kids' hands in the dirt. Or sometimes stuff gets left on the plant and it dries and goes to seed, but that's okay too. We can harvest the seeds and use them for later. So,
and introducing a lot of vegetables to kids, and I'd say fruit, but it's mostly vegetables, right, that you're growing?
Yeah, we try melons every year. Yeah. They're really hard to grow, but we do have blueberry plants in almost all the gardens too. Yeah. We got those donated from Bear Hill Farm and Norris Blueberries. So it's really cool to have, like, local farms donating to the school gardens. And they have strawberries, but yeah, for the most part, there's a lot of leafy greens. Mm-hmm. Carrots are really fun in school gardens because the kids get to pull them out. And it's like, they can't see the carrot until they pull it out. And they're like, wow, this carrot's huge. And yeah, like tomatoes, the usual.
Yeah. I just imagine, like, the lunch ladies being like, you're messing on my sloppy Joe Wednesday. What's these vegetables?
Yeah.
You know,
I want these veggies in my kitchen.
I know. I hear a lot of times, like, the kids won't eat that stuff, but I'm like, there's aphids all over the kale outside and they're still eating it with aphids on it. They'll eat it, especially if they grew it. They're really excited about it. So, like, that's
why
we
do it. They put in
their
work. They're proud of it. Right.
Yeah, they are.
I grew this vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I have no green thumb, so I know it's hard to grow stuff, you know?
I wanted so bad. The one year I did the most topsy-turvy tomato plants, and right as it got to where I was going to do it the next day, this deer came in. Like,
that's
he waited.
The deer.
He had a calendar before me. And he left me one little green tomato, and I ate it. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, man.
But, yeah.
It is the deer and the turkeys. Yeah. That's the thing. I know. I think we had, I think one year we tried to grow either it was cucumbers or jalapenos. I can't remember. And I'm pretty sure it might have been jalapenos, and the deer even ate the jalapenos. And a part of me was like, I hope you enjoyed all those jalapenos, deer.
They're brutal here. We definitely, I mean, that's like one of the first things. If you don't have a fence around your school garden, it's not going to work. It's just a deer buffet.
Yeah.
And you'll see their hoof prints in the raised beds.
Right.
Like, oh my gosh. We just had the deer come into the Phoenix garden and eat all our seedlings.
It's frustrating.
Right before it all froze anyway.
All right. So, what happens in the summertime with the garden?
The last few years we've had summer camp. So we've been really fortunate to have kids there all summer. Phoenix has Food and Farm Corps. So there's students that are working and getting paid to work on the farm there.
Oh, that's cool.
And if we don't have summer camps and things like that, then it's just us. We go. Now we have timers in all the gardens on a watering system so that we don't have to water every day. But we go weed and then harvest stuff. And we'll take – Roseburg does the – well – all the bigger school districts here do Lunchbox Express, which is the bus that drives around and drops off food. So we harvest it and take it to the schools that are preparing meals so that they can get it out on Lunchbox Express. And we've done like produce bags that we've donated to families when they come to the school, or if volunteers want to come, they can harvest and take it home.
I was going to ask you, do a lot of kids bring like the vegetables and fruit home too? Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. That's really cool. Yeah.
That's great. Especially fun. This area. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So how did you want to, or why did you decide to be part of what you do? Yeah.
I don't really know. I lived in Portland, and I actually did hair for a long time.
Okay.
I got tired of...
hair?
Yeah, hair. And like, you're listening to people tell you about themselves all the time. And I was like, oh, it's frustrating. Yeah. And so I went back to college and finished a degree in natural resources, but it was really soil science. And through that, I did an internship at the Boys and Girls Club in this town in Indiana where I'm from. And we built a garden there. And the kiddos like were just so ecstatic to have this tomato plant growing in their garden. And it was open to the community. And so neighbors would come in and take tomatoes and stuff. And the little kids were so upset. But I was like, if that's the worst of what they're doing is taking tomatoes, like I'm pretty okay with it. Veggies, I mean, they need tomatoes, so have it. So we would just grow more and give the kids tomato plants and stuff to take home and grow on their porch. But just seeing the kids so excited about growing their own food, and like we built a compost bin and they painted it and loved it. So that got me really excited. And then I did this big research project about childhood obesity in the farm to school program and kind of compared by the state childhood obesity rates before and after their farm to school program, which I really didn't know what I was doing as far as research at that point. So it was cool to see all the rates, but there wasn't any like hard data. But
oh, really?
No, but I think if that same study were done today, there probably would be.
I would think so too.
Like a lot more concrete results, because there's the farm to school program nationwide is huge. Oh. That's how I got into it.
Yeah. So you grew up in the Midwest in Indiana?
I did. Yeah. My grandparents were farmers.
Okay.
Actually. And that's probably part of what got me into it too.
I was going to ask you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really want to be a farmer because they work like way harder than I want to. Yeah.
Crazy but
I
hours. Love,
yeah. I love supporting farms. So I'm happy right here.
That's awesome. There's a garden by Fremont, by one of the churches. I don't know the church's name.
It's Westside Community Garden.
Okay, the community garden, yeah. My daughter plays basketball, and a lot of times when she's not in the gym, she's over. The church by there has like a covered basketball area, so I'm always seeing people over there tending to the garden and stuff
like that. Yeah, that's a nice garden. I don't think they – that's one of the oldest community gardens. Yeah, I think it's probably all full. It's a really nice one.
Yeah, so what else do you guys do? Your programs that you guys run?
So we do procurement, which is we connect schools with farmers in our area. It can really be any Oregon grown or processed food, but I try and support the local farm. So we connect schools and like the Boys and Girls Club with those people to buy their products and get them into the meals. And then we have all kinds of projects that we're working on. So we do a produce project in the summer where get grants to buy produce boxes and then distribute them through schools that do summer camps. So like Yonkala is where it started. We did Yonkala and Drain the first year, and we just did 45 boxes a week for I think 5 weeks. And we do education with it. So we did summer camps and cookbooks and all kinds of like food safety things. And then last year it grew to 90 produce boxes a week.
Wow.
For 90
a week.
Five weeks, which is a lot. I mean, I think it's like $10,000 or something that's going directly back to the farmers here.
Oh my gosh.
And then the families are getting fresh produce boxes where, like, you know, Yonkala has a small grocery store and they actually do buy local produce sometimes, which is cool, but it's not a supermarket. Yeah. So there's like food access issues all over Douglas County because we're so rural. Oh, so we go to Elkton too. There's no grocery store in Elkton. So they're all getting fresh produce. And then this summer, we're expanding to South County too. So we've recently split our program into youth grow and community grow. So youth grow is everything in schools and working with kids. So like the summer camps and the, you know, in-school garden education. And then community grow, we have a commercial kitchen too So it includes that, the procurement stuff we do. Mm-hmm. We have a plant a row for the food bank program.
Okay.
So I think now we have 6 seed libraries throughout Douglas County.
Is that through like UCAN?
It's with, yeah, with Feeding UCAN. Umpqua.
Okay.
So we get seeds donated from BuyMart each year, and we've created these seed libraries, and you can register. You can take free seeds and then register by scanning the QR code or just filling out the sheet. And you don't have to donate back to the food bank, but mm-hmm. the idea is you're planting your rows and you mm-hmm. donate part of what
that is so
you
cool.
grew back to the food bank.
That's awesome. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
That is really cool.
People are donating, mm-hmm. but you have to say, I'm donating this mm-hmm. on behalf of the Plant a Row program so that we can track the data. And I don't mm-hmm. think people are saying that yet. So mm-hmm. just trying to like... remind everyone, make right. sure you say it's for Plant a Row.
right.
right. And then the commercial kitchen is really exciting because we've never had our own office space even. Mm-hmm. We've shared space at like Phoenix School or worked out of our houses or shared space at Thrive Umpqua. So mm-hmm.
is that the Rainbow Kitchen?
Yes.
Yes, Rainbow Kitchen. Right. I love the name. right. love the Rainbow.
It's yeah. named after my cat.
oh, is it really?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Cat fans.
Yeah, we named it after my cat. You know, everything, one of my board members was like, everything around here is named after something Umpqua. Why don't you name it after your cat? It's Rainbow Kitchen. I was like, that's perfect. Pretty brilliant.
Yes.
And we want it to be a really inclusive space for everyone. And I was mm-hmm. like, what's more inclusive than rainbows? Mm-hmm. So in the kitchen, we can do classes. We have the whole front space for our office. So eventually we'll do cooking classes with the right. produce boxes, like the summer produce program. And then the kitchen can be leased by the month right. by producers or anyone that has a food-based business
right.
to increase their markets. And they can do like... So it's not ready to eat food so much. It's foods that you consume later. So like soups that are being made there and then frozen, and you can buy them at a store and take them home and eat them.
Interesting.
So it's not like a restaurant style or like grab and go food. But
interesting. So it would be like people that maybe would be selling like at the farmer's market or something like that. They needed a place to like make whatever they're selling. They could come and I see you have like membership fees or whatever, but they can come and pay whatever they want and make it there and then go sell it. And
yeah. So a lot of the stuff at the farmer's market, you can do what's called farm direct, which means, some of it you can cook in your home kitchen, mm-hmm. but then there's a lot of other foods that you can't. And like to sell to restaurants or to right. sell to stores, you can't do it out of your home kitchen unless you get a license like for a commercial kitchen. So that's why we opened the space. Just farmers have a lot of leftover produce at the end of a season that they didn't want to see go to waste. Mm-hmm. Clearly there's a need for this.
Right.
So yeah, it's been really fun. It's such a cool space. It's the old Umpqua Local Goods. I don't know if you remember that on Cass Street downtown.
Yeah.
And Cascadia Coffee was next to it.
Yeah, I remember we used to go all the time.
Yeah. Okay.
I shopped there a lot.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, I miss Cascadian Coffee. I love that place.
I know. I love that place too.
Do you have a favorite fruit or veggie?
Yeah.
Or veggies, favorite fruits or veggies.
It changes all the time. Multiple. But I actually had a dream about this fruit last night, and it's probably because I was like writing down my answers ahead of time. But have you ever had grapes, like local grapes in the summer? There's nothing better than like fresh local grapes.
A whole different taste.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just bought some at farmer's market recently.
Yeah. The skin's really
absolutely
thin.
Amazing.
They're like candy.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's my current favorite, even though we can't even get them right now.
Yes. Cool. Do you have a favorite like fruit or vegetable that you like to grow?
I love to grow okra. It's really hard to grow here though.
Huh.
I love okra and collard greens. I spent a lot of time in the South.
Oh my God. I just tried for the first time making gumbo, and I'm my own judge. Mm-hmm. So of course I thought it was amazing, but nobody else, I only had other people try, but people tried it that probably don't even really know it. I've had like real Southern gumbo before. So, I mean, it wasn't like on that level, like actual really Southern like gumbo, but it ended up pretty good. Like I made my roux and everything, and like I stirred the heck out of it and let that cook for like 6 hours. And then it started like breaking and falling apart.
Oh,
delicious.
Yum.
Oh, it was so good.
Okra is like a love or hate thing.
Yeah, I think. I like okra.
I do too. I love it. You can roast it in bacon grease. It's like the best thing ever.
My gosh. Okra or gumbo. And I think next I'm going to make is jambalaya.
There you go.
Yeah. I've been on just making stuff cake. And then randomly, I think I also want to try to make gnocchi. I don't know why. I went from like gumbo and be like, I think I'll try to make gnocchi next. Not
that's
that
funny.
Two are any sort of related at all. But
you should come to a cooking class. We should do a gnocchi cooking class.
I would love to
do
that.
I've never made it either.
I'd go.
I would love to. I've like just saved a bunch of videos to my phone. Like, how do I make gnocchi? How funny. Do you have an amazing garden at home?
I do. Yeah. We bought our house about 3 years ago and it had a bunch of raised beds, which I can't stand raised beds for myself personally. I like to put my feet in the soil and have a lot of space. So we took all the raised beds out and made one giant garden that's like about a third of our backyard. And it's fenced in, has these pretty little lights around it. We've got lettuce out there right now, a bunch of green broccoli and greens that are wilty and frozen right now. But yes.
So the trick to keep the deer out is just putting a fence around it.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone says there's like, there's all these plants that deer won't touch, but they'll touch it all. They don't know Oregon deer, I think, or Douglas County deer, maybe.
Yes.
I don't know.
And they come right up on the porch and eat it. They don't make you care less.
No
do,
shame.
You don't grow a garden, do you?
I want to. This is the year we're actually going to do it.
You're going to do it. What are you going to grow?
I don't know yet. That's the thing. Now that there's a seed library, this got real interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, you should come. We have Garden Hub meetings and stuff, too, at schools. Our next one will be at Jolaine, which is right down the street. You should come.
Yeah.
Check out their garden and see what's growing.
Absolutely, I will.
If you can invite three dinner guests over, who would they be?
Okay.
You can be dead or alive.
Everyone always throws in Jesus.
Right.
That's funny.
If you give Jesus, you're fine.
I know. I don't. So I recently went to Birmingham, Alabama, which was, I've been there a million times. I'm from the Midwest, and so we would drive through there on our way to New Orleans. But
I'm so jealous.
This time was a lot different. I went to the Civil Rights National Monument, and it was like way more moving this time.
Yes.
Just the state of our country, and I have kids now. I don't know. I wrote Martin Luther King, but really, like, there were like the kids that were murdered. Sorry, I don't mean to like take this in a bad direction, but like these four kids were murdered there.
Right.
All of them. Can they count as
one? Absolutely.
But Martin Luther King, I thought
that would be amazing.
A really cool one. Sean Sherman wrote the cookbook, the Sous Chef cookbook. So it's like indigenous recipes and stuff. So I thought that would be a really cool one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know for the third one. I really love Bob Marley.
Oh, okay.
So I thought about that.
That would be awesome.
And I feel like all these people are really like very political and like cultural too. Yeah. So
those are good answers.
Those are good choices. Yeah. I like that.
Those are my three.
What is New Orleans like?
Oh man, it's the best.
Describe it in every detail as you can. It's on the old bucket list.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I have lots of cool stories about New Orleans.
Yes.
We always stayed in a haunted hotel.
Oh my gosh, that's on Mark's Alley. Yes.
The very first time I went to New Orleans, I did a haunted history tour.
Oh my gosh, yes. I did one in Portland, so
They're super cheesy, but it was really cool. And so we walked past this hotel called the Biscuit Palace. So you have to Google it. It's an Airbnb now. Okay. But I was like, I'm staying there from now on. And so I did every other time I went there. So there's so much history and like just crazy cool stores everywhere, and the food's amazing. There's endless drinking. I hope your liver has like a backup or something.
Stamina.
Yeah. But like the Garden District is beautiful. Anne Rice's house was there, is there. There's just so much history. It's stinky because it's in this bowl below sea level. Yeah. So like they spray the streets down every morning because everyone's drinking all night.
Right.
I didn't know that.
But yeah, the food's just amazing.
Right.
Like gumbo, red beans and rice.
Oh my gosh.
Alligator.
Bouillons.
Etouffee and the beignets.
Beignets, yeah.
Gotta get the beignets.
Yeah, beignets.
Yes. Is it every other Sunday? They do like a parade or something like that. Yes. I literally stumbled across this thing. Like this lady who makes like a homemade noodles, or she makes some sort of dish basically so to soak in like the alcohol from the night before. People are like still partying from the night before and they go on like some parade like every second Sunday or something. I think it's called Second Sunday. I don't know.
I saw a funeral there 1 year that I was there, and it was a band, like a big brass band parading down the street with these family members and all kinds of people, and the casket.
Man.
They're like partying down the street. We looked out the window because we're like, it's like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and there's a brass band cruising down the street. It's a funeral.
Yeah.
And like the cemeteries are really cool.
Right.
It's like a family mausoleum too. Yeah. And it gets so hot that the bodies like cook faster than some places. And so they like open it up when someone else dies, push them to the back and put the next body in.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And during the Katrina and stuff, like when it floods.
Right.
All that stuff comes up.
Right.
So
Right.
It's really cool. It is stinky, but it's worth it.
So Aaron, I got to ask, I'm going to segue again because you touched upon it. You stayed in some haunted places, right? Do you ever have a paranormal experience?
I did, in the haunted hotel.
Please share.
Okay. So, you know, there's a lot of drinking going on in New Orleans, but I don't think this was related to that.
Okay. I don't think it was related.
Pepper Bigfoot started that way.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
So when I was growing up, my sister and I always thought our house was haunted too. I don't know. I love ghost stories. But when we were in New Orleans, this Biscuit Palace. So I was laying in the bed in my room, and I swear to you, someone sat on the end of my bed, and I sat up. I had two other friends of mine staying at the hotel at the same time, and I yelled at one of them, and nobody responded because it wasn't them.
Nope.
So, yeah, and like the shutters would open and close because they have shutters over the doors.
Yeah.
They would open and close. It's creepy.
That's when
but
I
it was
go.
Really cool.
Yeah.
You I would still stay went back.
That? I would definitely stay in that. I would
You would do the haunt. I can imagine the haunted tour in like in New Orleans is probably 10 times creepier than Portland.
Yeah. Portland wasn't that creepy. You're right. Portland, yeah. Eh. But yeah, I would definitely in New Orleans. That would be
like, where did they take you in New Orleans to do the haunted tours?
You go past a lot. Like, we went past the cemetery where Marie Laveau is buried, was entombed. But they say that she never died.
Yeah.
That she's still 700 years old or something now. We went past, the buildings there from like the 1700s. So you go past like this old blacksmith bar,
the
Biscuit Palace. We went past, I don't know, that a lot of it was just like a tour of New Orleans, but it ended in this seance. So you go into this like dark room. You can't see anything. Everyone has their hands on their neighbor and your feet are on their feet too.
Yeah. Hell no.
I know. And there's no, you can't, it's pitch black. You can't see anything.
No.
And I can't remember what they were talking about. I was just busy trying to figure out how they did whatever they did.
Yeah.
But I came to the conclusion that like the person doing it had steel toe boots on or something. And so tricks. They move stuff with their feet. I don't know if that's
or
true or not.
They?
Or it might have just been a real seance with some spooky stuff going on.
So in comparison, how the Portland ghost tour ends is getting a voodoo donut.
That's hilarious. Well, the New Orleans one is actual voodoo.
Yeah, that's
that's cool.
That's funny. Oh my gosh.
I love it.
Yeah. So another segue, totally different. Last episode we did, we talked about Abandoned Fire from like 1930s. And then we also talked about the Chicago Fire.
Oh, yeah.
So this is funny, you're from the Midwest too. So there's a lot of speculation about how the Chicago Fire got started. And I didn't know all this until I started reading about it. But apparently there is either it was a dice game and like people got caught. They were running out of the barn and knocked over the oil lamp. Or it was Mrs. O'Leary was out in the barn and the cow kicked over the oil lamp and started the fire. But our question led, how many times a day, why does a cow need to be milked at 2 in the morning?
Yeah, why would you milk a cow?
Like, why is somebody out, you know?
The story doesn't add up.
Right.
No.
So
you have to milk a cow. Maybe it was, like, having a calf. Yeah, I don't know anyone that milks a cow at 2 in the morning. Okay. Maybe, like, 5 in the morning or something.
Maybe, yeah. She said it was, like, maybe, like, 9, 10 at night. Is that common time to milk cows?
Maybe. I mean, it just depends, I guess, on what – I think it's like twice a day, but
– okay. So usually the cow's, you know, pretty good by like 9, 10 at night. Doesn't need to be milked, huh?
Probably.
I love it. We blew it wide open.
Yeah.
The whole major theory with the
– yeah. Now I'm leaning towards the crap game.
I mean, it's got to be the dice
I'm leaning
game.
Towards the it dice game. I can't remember the guy's name in it.
No, what was his name? Like one leg.
Yes, he had like a peg leg or
peg leg Steve, yeah.
That's the other scenario for the fire.
Yes. Yeah. It was pretty funny, all like the random scenarios that could have been.
Probably like moonshine caught on fire or something.
Yes. So if folks want to get involved with the organization, if they want to volunteer, if they want to reach out and just say, I love your guys' gardens or, you know, how do they do that?
Well, they can come visit us at Rainbow Kitchen.
Okay.
We have a volunteer page on our website, so they can sign up to volunteer that way. We have an event coming up at Fullerton 4 on February 25th to help build their garden a little bit more. They can always stop by that. We update our social media page all the time, Instagram and Facebook. They can check there. Send me a message. Send me an email. We've always got work to do.
Awesome.
The website's amazing. So it's uvf2s.org. Mm-hmm. It talks about, and you can meet the team. I love seeing everyone on the team. Mickey Hall.
Yeah.
She's a very well-known teacher. It's really cool to see her on there. To all your programs, the Rainbow Kitchen. Mm-hmm. I love the garden map.
Right.
Thanks. We need to add more to it. It doesn't have all the gardens.
Because this has like 24 on here.
Oh, okay.
So that's pretty cool. But yeah, if they want to see where the gardens are, I think that's amazing. There's a link for volunteer, link to contact, blog, and of course to donate. But yeah, that's a nice website.
Thanks.
That's a nice website.
I need somebody to like manage the website all the time.
So do you guys have like a peak busy season for like the schools reach out more like the beginning of the year?
I don't know. I feel like I get a lot more emails from teachers around November or from schools around November. I don't know if it's like they saw all the work in other school gardens that was happening and they're like, okay, November is a good time. We're, you know, let's get planning for next year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we don't ever have a slow time. I would like to say winter, but
yeah.
We're still doing lessons all the time in school. Mm-hmm. We're doing winter sewing right now. So,
and you do farm field trips.
We do. Yeah.
I love this field trip.
You can volunteer for those.
Oh my. I was just telling Mark. So
yeah,
I work for Umpqua Bank and they do, you get paid for Connect volunteer time. I was just telling him I haven't done Connect volunteer in a while, so I would love to do that.
Yeah. We always need volunteers for farm field trips. We do a farm tour. So like Laney Farm takes the kids around his farm on a tractor, which is like their favorite thing.
Right. Yeah, of course.
But then we do a recipe too. So the kids get to sort of help make something and then they get to try it. And it's like foods that are grown on the farm. And then they do a science activity on the farm or like planting, harvesting. So that
sounds like an amazing day.
That's a great field
trip. That's a great day.
Yeah, dude. It's fun.
And it's the same, it's different farms or it's
the, it's different farms. Yeah. Last year was our first year actually to do them. And we did Laney Farm and Valadez. And then this year, Roseburg Schools got a pretty decent grant. And so they included farm field trips. And last year, since it was our first time, it was trial and error. We took a whole grade level at one time, which can be like 80 kids, which is a lot on a small, very busy working farm. So this year we're cutting that number down, but expanding to other farms. So there's like ranches, Crane Creek Ranch is a good one that we might be able to take kids to see like the lambs. They're little tiny cute things. Mm-hmm. Who doesn't love that? There's another ranch in Glide that she's going to kill me for not. Talcott Ranch. Oh,
yes.
They're on an original Douglas County homestead. Yeah. I'm really excited to learn more about the history of that. They're cool people. That's the Triple T Milling. That's Luke Talcott. Okay. And he works for the Forest Service, I think. Sarah, I worked with Sarah when I worked at OSU Extension. Mm-hmm. And she's like dirt nerd like I am.
Dirt nerd.
Yeah.
Dirt nerd
is awesome.
Yeah. She's raising her kiddos on the ranch. And there's a ton of farms around here. There's some new farms that we're excited to take kids to. The blueberry farms, especially in summer when blueberries, I've never taken a kid to a blueberry farm, like other than my own, but how cool would that be to go pick blueberries while you're at school?
Yeah. Yes. Like we like to do Bro's Eyes and then James Orchard. I don't know if they still do it, but we do like the cherry pickings. Yeah. That's always fun to do.
Yes. We've done Bro's Eye Farm for field trips too. Yeah. He's been doing them forever. So that one's pretty easy to do.
If you're a farmer, how do you not just go by the name of Old McDonald?
I know a farmer named Dell, and I always want to sing the farmer named Dell.
See?
Of course.
I would just change my name to that. Is there there's probably like a science to like that, because you say dirt nerd. So is there like a formula, or do you have like a perfect science on like the dirt that you grow, like a soil? Yeah. That you grow, like does the need to be perfect for like a perfect vegetable? Like,
yeah,
this needs to be for carrots. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So my background is in soil science. Oh. And actually Farmer Dell is the only farm I've ever been to that can pick up a handful of his soil and tell me the name, because soil has names.
What?
Yeah. So he can identify what type of soil that is in his hand. I mean, I'm sure other farms can too, but he was like, this is, I think it was like Roseburg soil or something. What? Like that's the classification.
He just like rubs it in his fingers and he's like, that's some Douglas County soil.
You can see it's a different. So soil has like a certain percentage of sand and silt and loam. And we have really fertile soil here because it's river. Mm-hmm. So like old river deposits. Yeah. And so there's lots of nutrients and stuff in it. But yeah, I was like, I love this farmer. He knows his soil. Right. So, but yeah, like at Phoenix, the top part of their garden used to be a volleyball court. So it's really sandy.
Okay.
Which is great for root vegetables. So like carrots are a pain to grow, but they grow really well in there. So yeah, there's just different soil for different, like blueberries, like more acidic soil.
Interesting.
I had no idea.
There's actually like a soil diagram. That,
like a food pyramid for like soil?
Pretty much. Yeah.
And that is fascinating. So you went to school for say that and you were a soil.
So I went to school for natural resources, but that means soil. So I took every soil class you could. Mm-hmm. So like soil science is my background.
Soil science. Yeah. Soil science. Yeah.
Was that like a dirt cheap class to take?
No.
I wish.
No. No dad jokes today. And that's interesting. For 3 years, the first 3 years of my life, I grew up on a farm. I don't remember any of it.
And that was back in Jersey, right?
No, I was born in Jerusalem. And my first word was tractor. Not joking. You're looking at me like I'm crazy.
I love that.
I don't remember any of it. Obviously, I was three when we moved out of there. You would think I would, you know, being born and raised on a farm, I would have some sort of green thumb. But I can water some.
I can water all day.
That's about it.
It's a start.
Yeah.
I can mow too. I can kill it. All right.
I hate to mow. That's why I grow vegetables.
See, that's smart now. That's
brilliant.
See, now we're talking.
That's brilliant.
I'm tired of mowing.
Okay. So,
the most important question.
Yeah. Favorite sandwich?
It's a Reuben.
Mm-hmm. Now, what makes the Reuben so? What's a perfect Reuben?
The meat. Like, there's so much crappy pastrami out there. Gotta have good pastrami. Gotta have melty, delicious cheese. You can't have like a cheese slice that's not melted yet.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I can't eat wheat anymore. So the bread, too. Yeah. You have to have the right marbled rye.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the sauerkraut.
Yes.
And the Russian dressing, right? I don't know. It just all has to come together and be perfect.
It's got to be a perfect balance of it all.
But I do think the meat's the most important part of that.
Absolutely.
I guess some people put like a big slice of it. It's got to be like the...
Right. Or like corned beef. I corned beef. Next important question.
Yes.
Is favorite movie?
I think Goonies.
Oh, my gosh. Great answer.
Yeah. Yes.
Great answer.
Goonies never die.
That's true.
That house is like a hot topic.
It is right
Somebody
now.
Somebody just bought it and they don't want anything to do with the Goonies, right?
No, he
they
doesn't don't want to be bothered. But like the one neighbor doesn't like it, but then all the other neighbors round around it or something.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He wants to turn it into like a... destination.
Yeah.
Because people always look at it anyway.
Oh.
So he wants to make it available for the public, but it's like a residential area.
Right. Yeah, I've walked like to the driveway. That's about it.
Uh-huh. Me too.
Yeah.
Did you do the truffle shuffle there?
No. I watched many other people do it. I did not join in. I love Astoria.
Stopped at the jail.
Yes.
There was a black SUV there. I was like, are there bullet holes?
Yes. Astoria's. Yes. Isn't that a story that has the they have the bell ringer? I think it has like the – it's an old boat, I guess you can say, and it was converted into a fish and chips place.
Oh, yum.
Oh, man. And but they sell – it's not like cod or halibut. I think it's like tuna, but like they bred it so perfectly. Mm. We waited in like an hour and 20 minutes to try like this. It was absolutely amazing. It was so freaking good. It was so good. That is all the questions I have, sir.
Okay.
You have any questions for us?
How many shows have you done?
This will be 32.
Okay.
Yeah. This will be 32. Yeah.
Yep.
What's going to be next?
Oh, good question. We actually have the curator at Wildlife Safari.
Oh, fun.
Will be our next interview. Yes.
Yes. We're going to go on a safari.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that one.
That'll be super fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to learn about the Wildlife Safari.
There's a cool... I don't know. I'll have to figure out what it's called. There's some cool history down in southern Douglas County, I guess. There's a train track, and there were Chinese immigrants that were building the train track, and a lot of them got killed. I think it was like the slide or something down there.
Yeah.
But there's a plaque there, and I went to it years ago, and I have not been back. But that's a – I always thought it was a cool place to check out. You know Jack London, the writer?
Yeah.
Did you know that he – wrote books from Wolf Creek?
Yep.
Yeah. So that there's a trail, I think called the Jack London Trail or something, hiking trail.
Yeah. And isn't that in the Wolf Creek Lodge is haunted?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. And then I was like, ooh, Jack London, though.
I've been wanting to go
see that place. That is creepy.
Looking. That place is creepy, yeah.
Mark's into it. I'm not. If you want to get a hold of the show, you can email us at OregonFilesPodcast@yahoo.com. If you want to listen to the show, I say this, but obviously you are. You can tell your friends, your mom, your neighbor. You can check it out on YouTube. You can download it anywhere you get your podcasts on our Instagram page. If you click on the little link button, it just takes you to all the places that you can listen to a podcast, all the directories or whatever. And again, Aaron,
thank you so much.
What you do is amazing.
Yes.
We keep running into all these amazing people. And I have no doubt that we'll continue to find all these amazing people in our community. But thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.